Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Thank you all so much for giving to our Patreon. Without you, none of this is possible. We love you so much. I am Ben, that is Henry.
Yes.
Very good. Today we have the author of a couple of hit books. As a matter of fact, we used one of his books in as a research tool for our David Bowie episodes. The name of that book is Season of the Witch. He also has a book called Strange Frequencies, The Extraordinary Story of the Technological Quest for the Supernatural. Honored to have with us Peter Biebergall. Thank you so much for being on the show, man.
Thank you for having me. This is fantastic.
Awesome.
Do you feel now that you've spent, like, how many years have you had now devoted to the occult?
Well, I mean, really, I think is my whole life from the thing that I remember that completely blew my mind as a kid. Do you remember Creepy and Eerie magazine, the Warren magazine's Creepy and Eerie?
Sure. Yes.
So there was a creepy issue in which this boy used to hang out at the local malt shop where there was a pinball machine.
Just different times.
Because now it's all vape cafes and internet cafes.
Yeah, this
and
then they're 70s, not even
yes.
Pinball machine, and these hoodlums, like gangsters, were coming in and they were bothering the owner, Pops. And eventually they killed him. And so this boy uses some grimoire and conjures these demons.
Fuck yeah.
And they take the demon takes the gangsters and he puts them in this giant pinball machine.
Whoa.
Ultimate fucking revenge. And honestly, it's something about big fat Italian men being chased by giant silver balls.
I would love to see like Coco Diaz be haunted by yes. a demon. He's a great podcaster and a wonderful comedian. But that really is a wonderful story.
Yeah, I mean, goes back my whole life. This is what I've loved reading about and thinking about and not necessarily doing per se, but it's, you know, fed my imagination from the get-go.
Our people seem to have been born, not made. I feel like there's a lot of people like this because Marcus and I were like this. Kissel was way more just into just pure violence, just on the street.
No, that's not true. I like ghosts and demons and stuff. We had the Ouija board. What is that? And of course, Japanese death matches. Yes, we have to watch some wrestling. Come on.
But there's something about a hidden, like, do you feel like it ended up coming out? Like, I know that my interest in the occult definitely stemmed from being very afraid as a little boy. I think I was a scared little kid, and it fueled my obsession with the occult. But then we made it our jobs, right? All of a sudden, now it's our profession where we're up to our eyebrows in the occult. And how has it affected your life now? Like, now that you are in a lifelong journey. Like, as my therapist asks me several times a week, how do you sleep?
Yeah, and sort of to phrase that in a comedy sense, Henry and I, of course, have been doing comedy for years. We never watch it. I cannot consume comedy. I want nothing to do with it. Have you been bored at all, or do you try to avoid the occult, or are you fully into it?
Well, so here's a few things. So first of all, so as a kid, I was also a very anxious kid, but I loved monster movies. I loved scary things. I love that because it was like sort of this projection, right, where you could sort of turn it into myth and narrative. So I was all into that, Creepy and Eerie, all the famous monsters of, Filmland magazine and watching Creature Double Feature and reading those books and all that. But then let me tell you a little story. But I started getting deeply into it as a teenager and started to get a little bit wonky in my head because I was also feeding it with other substances.
Hell sure. Yeah. Got to.
I went through a period of time where I actually became extremely superstitious and just stopped reading about it at all, wasn't interested in it at all. I went on to study religion and theology. Mm-hmm. I didn't necessarily become more religious. I just couldn't deal with anything that smacked of the occult in any way.
Interesting.
But then as I started to sort of reflect on my life, I realized that it had really played a huge part in, I mean, maybe it was like this construction of my imagination. Like, it wasn't about belief for me. It was about just the way I thought about the world, the way I imagined things, the things I was sort of – the language that I used, without even realizing it. And then I realized in some ways there wasn't anything to be afraid of. for me in a superstitious way, because the truthiness of it became less interesting to me as its cultural impact and the way in which it's provided this source of incredible both fear and inspiration for the culture. So take it this way. You have a kid. He's 16 years old. He's in his bedroom. He's listening to the heavy metal album, has the upside down pentagram on it.
Yeah. Right.
He thinks he's interacting with some infernal powers.
Mm-hmm.
The band that put out the album was probably like, hey, let's put an upside down pentagram on the
album. Yeah, exactly.
But his parents are upstairs freaking out, thinking that he sold his soul to the devil.
Right.
So that's like a spectrum of all these things. But I think they all are of a piece of this thing that's of our imagination that I want that I'm completely obsessed with.
I really like that approach. I really like that approach because it's true, right? Because then it takes on its own inner life. It goes past even what the artist meant for, as either artist or author even meant to conjure, because it's true. It can be a lot of arbitrary choices or just shit being like, I want to see a bunch of hot goth girls wearing my shirt. Like, I want to do this thing. We're gonna make all of this so that we want this one outcome. But you're actually creating this like feedback loop between what is actually possibly the occult, and you're just kind of an avenue for it. Would you say especially in Season of the Witch, like, because we covered David Bowie specifically? Now, you covered a lot of stories within it and addressed rumors, certain things you deflated and certain things you looked at in terms of certain of pop stars and their mixing up with the occult. Would you say any one of them, besides just commercially, were actually helped or touched the occult? Like, which ones of the, like, if there are there a story where
who's
it's like,
legit, I guess, huh?
Like, because like David Bowie for me is the closest. Like, if you re-listen,
totally legit.
Yeah.
No. Explain that. Why is David Bowie a true magician? Why is he one of the legit ones?
Because if you define magic as Crowley did, which is the art and science of causing change to occur in the world according to will, right? So change doesn't mean you've made something levitate, right? That's not the kind of change I don't think he was talking about necessarily, or any sort of these kinds of magicians are talking about. What they're talking about is the way in which culture actually – something actually is transformed by what your intention is.
Right.
And Bowie's transformations also – Bowie's – at his musical as a form of magic actually transformed himself as well, right, into all these characters.
Well, that's interesting. You know. So do you think that David Bowie, because he went through a lot of different musical phases, so you would say that he wasn't following the trend, he was creating the trend? Is that safe to say?
I think that's true. I think he definitely knew what his sources were, right? But you're always – even the most powerful magician, if you – in that sort of – that – the idea of the magician is still having to borrow and synthesizing all these different things, right?
Okay.
But you've created something new that suddenly takes on this life of its own.
Sure. Okay, interesting.
Yeah, it lives. That's kind of what you're saying. It's basically you have birthed an entity. David Bowie, in a way, birthed himself, which is that he came out the other side. He came out as Ziggy Stardust. He came out as a Thin White Duke. He came out when those things came out of it. I mean, yeah, you laugh at it because you like the word Duke.
It's so funny.
You do like
that. Yeah, there's a little humor in there. There's a little humor in there.
I'm gonna go insane. But I feel that – but is there anybody – so – I feel like David Bowie's like obviously like an outlier, but there anything on the inside that you saw that were like, oh, they might have touched something? Like Jimmy Page, it's like if you think about Led Zeppelin, kind of that same thing, but that seemed to be way more of them just trying to get chicks.
Yeah, but I think Page was sincere in his also devotion to this idea that magic, at least as a kind of glamour that you wore, you know, acted as a way of conjuring this sort of libertine self that was not tied to any necessarily like, you know, normative moral ideas. So this is where the occult too, for bands like that, become like a they become like a call out to say that we're dangerous, we're on the edge, we're not, we're pushing up against the mainstream, we're heterodox, right? So and that's also, if you look at the history of magic also, especially as it got incorporated into mainstream religion, it was always about, look, magic doesn't exist without its like religious constructs, right? I mean, the great Jewish magicians, you know, Kabbalists were Jews first and foremost.
Yes.
But they recognized that what they were doing was existing sort of on the edges of things, that they were pushing against sort of the normal ways of thinking about religious practice. So a musician like Jimmy Page is thinking about, he's a rock and roll musician, but he's pushing up against the normal ways of making music. And if you wear a kind of outfit that's magical, you know, in whether it's your lyrics or the way you're playing or the way you're just imagining yourself, it all comes together. So it's not like magic is this thing that exists over here and the art is a thing that exists over here. They're one and the same.
But I feel like that's what people directly misunderstand, especially if you, like when you read about like one of my favorite writers in terms of the magical world is Anton LaVey, because I love his sort of practical approach. I love the idea of outside in, which is kind of what Jimmy Page accidentally was puppeting and mirroring, which is being like, I have to build the legend on the outside for people to build me up, to fill the essentially the paradigm I've created for myself. And then as I fill out my own view, my own legend, I am then also like essentially buying your affection. I am enchanting you.
Let's put it this way, okay? The occult, whether or not there are actually demons or angels or infernal things, or that we can use correspondences to affect actual, you know, manifestations of will or intention, whether or not that's true or false, these symbols, these ideas, they have a power on our psyches. You don't need the demons to be real in a way I knock on this table real. The imagination as a reality doesn't mean it's less true. It's just existing in a different way our consciousness can interact with it. It's just as powerful, just as potent.
Right. Well, the interesting thing to me, and this is a little bit of a different kind of a swerve here on the conversation. I mean, it's been absolutely fascinating so far. I don't know why Henry's shaking his head over here. But, you know, I don't really like these religions too much and the occult and stuff. It is what it is. But why do you think, what is the role of death in all of this? You know, like I always feel like people get into religion, get into the occult because of this inevitable fear of the end, as opposed to just like realizing it could just be the great black that you don't even know, like what was life like before you were born? No clue. Don't particularly care to know. What's the role of death in all of this? Do you think that it's a key component to people getting into religion or getting into the occult?
I think that the idea of death obviously is something that's essential in wanting to believe that the soul exists after we die. I think it's a big problem in terms of how we think about sort of action in the world. Like, it's almost like, especially if you're a fundamentalist Christian in some ways, or like a rapture believing Christian, you kind of want to be here for the end, right? You want to be one of the lucky ones that gets to see it all happen.
Right.
And it's partly because you have this idea that it's going to go on after that, that there's this some better world. And if there's some better world, then maybe you don't really have to take care of the one we're living in, maybe as well as you should, you know. I think what's interesting for the occult, though, practices is it's less about trying to secure a place in the afterlife as it is about trying to have a kind of knowledge over yourself. I do think that in some ways occult practices are more oriented towards the world now than, say, other religious practices. However, one of the things in Strange Frequencies that I did spent a lot of time with was talking to and researching the spiritualist church, right? So the, the spiritualist church is, you know, church where people essentially believe that mediums can communicate with our dead loved ones. But it's not to gain like special secret occult knowledge from them. It's really just so that they that they believe that the spirits want us to know that everybody's okay, that they're on safely to the other side. It's closure. It's a total sense of closure. Spiritualism became incredibly popular at the end of the Civil War because people were desperate to, you know, the trauma of losing loved ones in that way. And there was actually a spiritualist newspaper in Boston where the mediums would have communications from dead soldiers. And they would say things like, you know, Lieutenant Goebbels, dear mother, please don't cry for me. I am on the other side and I am free. And I can't wait to see you here.
Was there ever a soldier who was like, you didn't even mourn at all? It seemed like you were happy when I died. What the hell is going
on? You fucking Jeb?
You're already having sex with my brother? What the hell is happening?
Exactly. Well, that's like the editor then is like, strike through.
We are talking with Peter Biebergall, the author of Strange Frequencies and author of Season of the Witch. This is just absolutely fascinating. Make sure you get out there and buy these books because they are wonderful. If you have any interest in the occult, or even if you just don't have an interest in the occult but you want to learn more, just please do it.
Have you tried any occult rituals? Have you gone to the edge? Have you tried to do it? Like, have you done anything?
In my teen years in particular, when I was, you know, like I always say, you know, David Bowie is sort of the poster child for not mixing your Kabbalah with cocaine.
Yeah.
You know, it's like very, very dangerous, you know. Yeah. So I had that experience as well, right, where you just sort of are trying to fuel something and you're so desperate for that connective, finding that connective tissue of everything that you just get more and more looking for more and more meaning, more and more meaning. So you know, so my own practice now, though, is much more about meditation. I practice the I Ching, which is the Chinese oracle. You know, we use a couple of pennies and you create these hexagrams. What I like is I'm not interested personally in power, I guess, is sort of for myself or trying to reshape anything. It's more for me about trying to feel connected to something that's outside of myself. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. I mean, that's kind of what I went through a period of time where I was doing ritual magic. I was attempting to do ritual magic, and then I found that what it did was it created, because I lacked the true discipline of someone that should be doing ritual magic, which means you essentially, it needs to be your life. You need to really walk the walk, as it ended up adding a lot of chaos to my life. So now what I did was I've pared it down to sort of what I do every day, like my little rituals, like literally the things I play. I have an altar in my home, it's all about me. It's not really about the universe. It's about me connecting back to something inside of myself.
So I do that in ways. For example, I can show you, I don't know if you'll see it, but so I have abracadabra in Hebrew tattooed. Yeah. I just got this tattoo.
Very cool tattoo.
Fuck yeah, dude. It's super metal, man.
Yeah. But again, the idea there is that, you know, it's about my life being something that's about trying to connect with some other notion of consciousness, other notion of what's, you know, more than myself, getting outside of myself.
Well, you know, we have a lot of younger listeners, and I know we've talked a little bit about youth here so far, talking about doing these rituals as children. We used to play with the Ouija board on a regular basis growing up, and we were very into it. We went to Catholic school, and the one fun thing about Catholicism is the ritual, and it does get you really thinking about demons and being possessed at some point. What does the role of youth have to do with being more vulnerable or available or open to experiences with the occult?
Yeah, well, partly it's because we still have that magical thinking where we believe that our thoughts can actually shape reality. I mean, it's just, you know, not stepping on the crack on the street is part of that.
Right.
But I also think that there's something that we lose later, which is the ability to connect with myth, you know, the ability to connect with these stories. Look, all the popular YA novels right now are all about the individual who stands above and beyond the fray, right? That they are first seen as somehow outsider, but actually they're the savior.
Like a Scott Pilgrim type thing, yeah.
That's right. So as soon as you yourself have – there are those moments where you all feel like, you know, I'm the weirdest kid in the world. You know?
Right.
There's nobody that can understand me.
What if you still feel like the weirdest 34-year-old man in the world?
God bless you. You know? So you feel like the weirdest kid in the world. And so you seek out, I think, those stories and those ideas, those symbols that – that makes sense for you. But right. I think that's also the same reason why David Bowie and Jimmy Page got into this stuff, because they themselves they were still those kids who understood the value of magical thinking as an artistic – but see, they took it this way. Instead of going internalized and being the depressed teenager, they went outward and they made art.
Right.
Now, so this is I feel like it's important for kids to have something to believe in at some point when they're kids. It's hard because I feel like I was also raised Catholic, which was in the end, it was like I drank the seething blood of the Christ man and I watched him scream as he was flayed upon the racks and all this shit. So like I understand that did kind of inform me as a human being.
I just remember one of my first memories of Catholic school was a priest telling me that he went to a Catholic mass and he said, the bread of the body of Christ literally turned into a bloody oozing mass of flesh.
Jesus Christ.
Then I'm like, I raised my hand. I was like, and you just like ate it? Like, is it like, what is going on? It was like, yes, you eat it. And then that's blood. I'm like, what is happening? How is this?
No, that's but I think it's important for kids to have that because then I feel like it does give you fuel to move into higher echelons of thought as you get older. I think like it's even now, like, you could say whatever you want about the chilling adventures of Sabrina the Teenage Witch. I watched it. It's not for me. But it's interesting that now, like, little kids are watching this witch girl actually do real Satanist-themed things on a show, and it's feeding them. And I wonder what it's going to do to this generation.
Oh, yeah. But look, I mean, we could have a whole conversation right now. I mean, we really, in many ways, are living in sort of an occult revival. People, more and more people are self-identifying as witches. There's that
let's do that. Can you just explain why do you think that is?
Well, so let's look at the periods of time when we've had these occult revivals. The first, what we call the occult revival, was happening at the turn of the century with the development of the Theosophical Society, the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, spiritualism. And this was a time of great upheaval. The Industrial Revolution was coming in. Darwin, Freud were kind of disenchanting everything, right? They were pulling sort of spirit out of everything. And this was a way in which you could feel that you didn't have to give over to sort of these religious hierarchies that just seemed to be messing things up all the time, but rather maybe you believed in women's some form of sexual or women's liberation, or you were interested in looking to the East for, you know, or to the ancients for knowledge. You wanted to feel like there was a little bit more rationality behind it, maybe.
Sure.
Not just what you might consider superstitious. So that's the first, but that occult revival has impacted us. We still feel the impacts of it today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you could look even, I'm sure there are on Sabrina, I think there was one where they were looking through a grimoire and there were probably stuff from the Golden Dawn in there. I didn't look carefully enough. Where else are they going to get their references from?
Are there any cultural parallels with what was going on then and now? Is that why the revival has sort of happened?
Well,
is
there one other in the middle, which was the 60s.
Okay. Yes.
Another time of great cultural upheaval, Vietnam War, right? People really turning their backs on what they saw as this sort of promised American, you know, ideal, right? Because it was failing, right? It was failing in the inner cities. It was failing for women. It was failing for the war, all of this.
Right.
So now that happens again. People turn to the East. They're looking beyond their own traditions for something else. They're practicing magic. They're taking psychedelics. They're changing their consciousness. now we're at another time of great, I think, spiritual upheaval where we're seeing absolutely. That even these other sort of more, you know, the sort of new age didn't ever arrive in that sense, right?
Right.
The crystals aren't doing it.
No.
But you still want to feel like there must be some way of gaining a semblance of your own internal spiritual power in the face of what feels like just overall ugliness and chaos, right? I think especially for women, there's an empowering thing there, this idea of the witch, like you reclaim this.
Sure. And I'm just to follow up on that, just briefly, do you think that has anything – and I do not want to mention anything about – Orange Dumpy-Doo, but you know the fact that he considers himself an evangelical and all of these evangelicals were like
he's a liar, but they went
along with him. So do you think that sort of made people again lack faith in religious institutions?
But I want to actually couch that with, have you done any reading about the rise of him and the and 4chan and internet magic?
Oh sure,
and the connection of Keck to an accidental gigantic super ritual. Have you read into any of all that? And does that have anything to do with that? Because a true magician, the idea is that you're picking up and leaving frames of vision and of mind. Like, you could pick up the evangelical lens if it suits you, and then you discard it, which is that he is the king of the shallow grasp of concepts.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so I think that also he in some ways empowers. So we have this thing called the alt-right and all of that and 4chan and Keck. But there's also, and there's always been, this sort of continuum of right-wing, vaguely fascist occultism.
That is a big thing, because it's weird, because I was just reading about that, about how it's actually a cultural marker of fascism is their obsession with the esoteric. It's very – I don't know why that is. It's both with the far left, which is like super libertine, and then also with this other side.
Why is that? Could share this idea that there was a greater – ancient golden age that we must return to. And it's for some, that ancient golden age was built and dominated by the white master race who were super magicians or something, right?
Yeah, some garbage. Yeah, they came from they either came from Atlantis, or they came from Nibiru, or they came from like all of that kind of shit. They came here through the tetrahedron transformation machines, where they came from Mars and all that kind of bullshit.
Exactly. So all those things. But again, it's always about this idea that there was some other time where magic was real, where the gods walked among us. But it depends on what you give prior, which race you kind of prioritize as the ones that had special access to that, right? And now the idea is we want to – so you have to understand something. When people talk about white supremacy, they're not talking about something new. They're talking about the return to something they believe once was. Make America great again, right? That's the point. Again is like this sort of key word.
Yeah, that's definitely the key component there. Interesting.
But magic, you know, it is often about having to reach back to a kind of knowledge that we may or may not believe was lost.
Well, right? Henry brought up 4chan and just sort of the internet in general and technology. Has that played a role in the rise of the occult? I don't even know, just the collective unconscious. Does it manifest itself on Twitter when we talk about, you know, having a worldview, projecting it out, and then causing social change, as we have seen with multiple Twitter movements? What's the role of how has the occult been impacted by modern society and tech?
Well, so there's two questions there. The first, though, is, you know, this idea of being the weirdest kid in the world. As a friend of mine once said, you know, before the internet, you really believed you were the weirdest kid in the world. And then you go online and you realize everybody's a big weirdo. Yeah. And not only is everybody a big weirdo, but you can get super micro level into your little niche, tiny thing that's like it doesn't just have to be like furries. It's like wolf furries who only have black ears, whose tail was cut off, you know, what – you just keep going down.
Look up Goofy Ken, man.
Oh, really don't. Do not look it up.
Fonzie.
Do not look it up.
Is that safer to show the kids?
No.
The kids will be quickly taken away by a very real law enforcement officer.
Do not.
Yeah. So that's the one thing is, you know, but what's interesting too is when you have the subcultures that people were before the internet were so desperate to connect with. And now on the internet, you have these subcultures that have fragmented and they all fight amongst themselves. Right now, you keep creating these subcultures within subcultures. They all hate each other now. But the other question about technology, which is essential, is that technology at every stage in which we have sort of invented something or taken something apart to see how we could, you know, think about it in a new way, has always allowed for people to think that that gave them a new kind of window into interacting with the occult, with the supernatural. So let's take spirit photography, for example, okay? When people were thought that they could take pictures of spirits, it wasn't that they thought the spirits were always kind of dancing around us and we just needed to quickly snap the picture. They believed that the spirits were waiting for us to invent the camera, essentially, so that they could make themselves known in a way that before they had to rely on something like a dream vision. But now the spirits are like, finally, you guys, we've been waiting for you to be smart enough.
You're catching up. Yeah.
You're catching up. Exactly.
Hmm.
The same with what we call electronic voice phenomena. I don't know if you've ever done any studies on that where people, you know, use radios to try to communicate with spirits. It's not that these voices are always around us. You could argue spirits don't have a voice box, but if you give them a radio tuned to a dead station, they can manipulate the static. They become the hackers on the other side, as it were, using our technology to sort of break through. Right, that's like Poltergeist is the great moment when the spirits need the television set to get into the house.
Right.
That's how they get in.
Well, that's kind of what they say in the world, like in my sad world of the UFO experts. They say, and a part of what the Pleiadians and various extraterrestrial races that have supposedly made contact with the poor people that have become their mediums, they have been told essentially, like, we have to catch up to them. The only way for them to come and help us is that philosophically, spiritually, technologically, we have to basically create the base for them to come and be able to link up with us and actually help us. And until then, we're essentially fucked.
That's right. There was this guy named Speer in the turn of the century who thought he could invent a perpetual motion machine. And he thought that he said that he was having conversations with the spirit of Ben Franklin, who now was part of a group of spirits called, I think it was called the Electric Geysers.
Awesome.
Ooh.
That belonged to like this spirit secret society of inventors and engineers.
Hell yeah, dude. I like to see – that's the show, man. That's the television show I'd like to see.
Exactly.
But now this is kind of what you're deeply exploring with Strange Frequencies.
That's right. So it's all about – but it's also about how technology becomes a way that we have used to sort of change our consciousness in that way, like William Burroughs and Brian Geisen's Dream Machine. Right. I don't know if you're aware of that. It's the Brian Geisen was an artist friend of William Burroughs. He had this experience where he was on a bus and the light was reflecting through the trees in a weird way as he stared out the window, and he kind of went into a trance with the flickering of the light through the trees. So he had this idea, well, why can't we make a machine that can do that? So he worked with this fellow to build a machine, basically just a piece of cardboard folded into a tube, cut out some holes, put it on top of a turntable, record player, put a light in the middle of it, turn it on, it spins. And when you stare at it, the light flicker effect can induce these trance states, actually change the wave states of your mind.
Jeez.
And so here's a way in which technology becomes a vehicle to sort of explore these other states of consciousness.
We're talking with Peter Biebergall, again, author of Strange Frequencies and the book Season of the Witch. Get out there and buy those books. This is absolutely fascinating stuff.
But we are just, because our brains are just mounds of jelly connected to the meat that is the human experience. And it's kind of interesting how you can literally just kind of fuck with your brain. You can like put a finger in it, and what that does is like it can really change your perspective enough that you come up with new great ideas. And then you wonder, like, is it just fucking with the lobes of your brain, or are we connecting to a higher consciousness?
Well, I mean, that goes to sort of an essential question. I mean, personally, I don't like to make grand metaphysical statements, but part of the reason why any of this stuff is interesting and makes sense to me, and I don't say this in the book, but I'll say it here, but the reason why the occult and all these things are interesting to me in a deep way is because I don't believe that consciousness is just a chemical reaction in the brain. So I don't think that consciousness is located in the brain. I don't know where it is. I don't think science will ever know that necessarily.
Because what they've said is our brains are built like antennas, right? So we can sit and we can both absorb frequencies and send it out. It seems to be. I've read several things that I, in my weed-addled brain, I have tried to understand, which is that what could be consciousness is essentially kept in essentially like in the cloud, and that we are connected to what is a natural Wi-Fi-like cloud, which is that what we are now building technically like the physical version of that. What the internet is actually our attempt to recreate the way we work naturally, psychically. And now we are kind of seeing what happens when you are, imagine if you're actually psychic, and that's what Twitter is. That's what the internet is. It's just the constant barrage of others' images onto your own brain.
So back in the day when we didn't have the cloud as we know it now, when it was just the collective unconscious, you didn't get to Google and you wanted to see, you know, Katie Couric nude. I don't know why you would want to do that.
You would have to
think about it. And now you can just Google it. Isn't that different?
That's right. Yeah, exactly.
that's an example
that you came up with?
Because we're working. I'm trying to be the bridge so everyone can understand. Or Tom Selleck. I know the ladies always like to see, oh, I wonder what Tom Selleck would look like.
Your mother is
representative of millions of women all across this country.
But it does beg the question of who your audience is.
Yes, that is true.
It's not our mother. I don't think so. But I, all of this is endlessly fascinating. There's one chunk of your book that I really want to get into and talk about is the golem. I think golems are very interesting, and the idea that people would be trying to build a new one, like idea. So you went. Did you attempt to see somebody make an automaton?
Well, so they did two different things. Versus, I thought maybe I would see what does it mean to try to build a golem. Well, Sweet. It turns out to build a golem, you have to memorize 42,000 permutations of Hebrew words.
And that's one of those ideas you have, and then you're like, nah.
It's three whiskeys in. I'll tell you what.
It's built to prevent you from trying, right? It's the secret knowledge. It says, sure, you could do it. Yeah. Here's the formula. Go ahead. Have fun.
So what exactly is a golem? Just go back to the most basic.
I'm sorry, Kissel.
Yeah. So there's two different ideas. The first was what is the most recognizable is the legend of the golem of Prague, which is the Jews were being tormented. There were pogroms in their village. They went to the rabbi, please help us. The Christians won't leave us alone. They're burning our homes. They're blah, blah, blah. So the rabbi goes into his home or his sacred space, and he pulls together mud and clay and water, and he builds a figure, and he puts a secret name or Hebrew word, Emeth, on the golem's forehead. Okay. The golem comes to life, and it goes and wreaks havoc on the people who are tormenting the Jews.
That's a great movie.
Then he goes too far. He's killing everything in sight. The people run back. Rabbi, we didn't want him to slaughter everybody. We just wanted him to tell us tell them to leave us alone.
Well,
oh my God, dude. Honestly, I just want to see the golem just be like, just doing my job, just doing my job.
The rabbi, and one of my favorite versions of the story, the rabbi has to, the golem's gotten so tall, the rabbi has to climb up on a ladder. He erases the name, and then in a heap, it crumbles on top of him.
Cool.
And, right.
Oh, that's awesome.
The golem is put to sleep. So this legend shows up in many places. It shows up in the Brothers Grimm do a version of it. It's in the Michael Chabon novel, The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay. He does a whole golem bit in there. There's films about it. It's a very popular legend. But there's also a Kabbalistic idea of the golem, which is more of this sort of magical, mystical moment in which you're trying to create this – you're trying to sort of do what God does in a way, right? But you're not just trying to do what God does by creating something. You're trying to use the means by which God did this thing. And you have to understand, for Kabbalistic Jews, God created the world – using Hebrew letters by kind of think about it like computer code, you know, putting all the letters in a certain way, and then there's creation.
It's the binary of everything that ever exists. It's literally the physical element of the word is actually very important.
That's the belief. So for the mystic, he's trying to do that also. Taking the source code and putting it all together in such a way to try to create something. But in some ways, it's really more just about like an ecstatic trance experience than it is about trying to create a physical guy that's going to go and do your laundry or something, you know?
Oh, that would be great. Yeah.
Man,
a laundry golem.
Yeah, my golem does my laundry. He sucks my dick. He's great at it. He's great at both. But I think that it's...
Actually, I'm surprised it's taken us this long in the conversation to get to that joke.
Pretty mature. Pretty mature.
I always make sure to give our customers their money's worth.
Uh-huh.
But you cover this in Strange Frequencies, because now I want to get into it, because we're going to... Please buy the book. I'm excited to read the book, but I want to see what happened. So you go to this guy's house... Does it have the thing where it's like the Kabbalah trees like on the wall? Does he do it?
Nobody let you do that. I called some guy in Israel. I called a rabbi there. Can you teach? Has anybody done it? Can you teach me how to do it? He didn't want to talk to me about that.
Of course not.
You know, so he said, well, you know, he used it as a metaphor. This is the golem you create inside yourself.
Sure.
So there's no. So then the idea was, well, who else tried to create life? Well, we have the idea of the Frankenstein story, but what was happening in the 18th century was the development of a very precise and complicated clockwork mechanisms. That's when people were designing the automaton. So you have, you know, like the, do you ever see Hugo or read the book Hugo, the writing automaton? There's one that plays a harpsichord. There's one that plays a flute. There's even a famous one called Vonkensohn's duck, which is a mechanical duck. That will actually eat a little piece of food, and it will poop it out.
Yeah.
No. As a way of, again, showing that any human processes can be mimicked by our inventive capacity. Right? That's what this is all about. Whether we're talking about magic or we're talking about technology, we're talking about the occult and technology, we're talking about the human being hacking reality. Right, they're taking something, they're unscrewing it, they're voiding the warranty, they're seeing what they can do, and then they're putting it back together again and see what happens.
Yeah, we have AI now. That's kind of AI is going to be the ultimate. It comes down to almost like the theory of like our obsession with killing ourselves, like the kind of Thanatos principle, where we're so excited to create our replacement. It's like we will do this thing that will eventually replace us because it will end up fixing itself and moving far faster than us. And then I wonder what is that with the mixture of magic and technology? That is the new golem.
It's the post-humanists, believe they can eventually will upload their consciousness. And now we're back to your fear of death issue. Right,
exactly.
All of this in the end is about immortalizing ourselves.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's why, you know, musicians, they always say the music has lived on, the music will live on after us. And of course, that is the truth. So
no, but I am going to live on in a fucking exoskeleton. I am already.
You're not
going to
live.
I'm going to live on in my brain.
Honestly,
in a vat,
you know who's going to
exoskeleton?
I hate to break it to you. It's going to be Dick Cheney. It's just going to be Dick Cheney is going to get the exoskeleton. We're not going to get it. We're working class people.
Unfortunately, but the entertainment class will be saved by the robots. If any,
you can buy a 3D printer now, pretty cheap. Yeah. Bring it home, print out the exoskeleton.
Boom.
Strap it on.
Terror of my neighborhood. And I guess what, man? It's like when I take that exoskeleton and I go to Washington, D.C., you want to see some hope and change? That's how change's going to take. It's going to take me and a gigantic 12-foot tall with machine gun turrets.
All right. Well, once we get down to threatening the government, we got to wrap it up just legally. all right. Well, thank you so much. Any other questions you have, Henry? Or are you, what do you think? I mean, I thought this has been absolutely perfect.
I'm having a blast. Thanks, guys.
I love this, dude. I want to have you back. I want to read the book,
please.
And I want to have you back because we're trying to, in 2019, we're trying to have even more supernatural topics. And I feel like a part of it is it's really getting the base. And I stuff like this, stuff like Strange Frequencies, I wanted to give it to our listeners so that they have a base. Like a part of it's like building it up so that we can all learn properly about the supernatural.
Hey, yeah. I'll tell you something. Let's do this. If your listeners, is there a place where they can comment?
Yes.
The first person that can name the story, the issue number, and the artist of that creepy story about the pinball machine, I will get them, the first person on your website that does that, I'll send them a copy of both books, Season
awesome.
Of the Witch and Strange Frequencies.
You got it. You could just email sidestorieslpotl@gmail.com.
Yes, and we will send that information on to you, Peter, and then we will let you know who the lucky winner is.
Fantastic.
Peter Biebergall, author of Strange Frequencies, The Extraordinary Story of the Technological Quest for the Supernatural, and also author of Season of the Witch. Get these books. Pick them up. Thank you so much for being
Thanks,
on the show,
guys.
Man.
Appreciate
Thank
that.
You, buddy.
Live from your grave.
I learned a lot. I feel that. I wonder if there are other rock and roll guys now, you know, these rocksters. I wonder if they're using the occult still.
For some reason, I feel like Kid Rock isn't.
No.
And that might be.
Yeah. I could see him with his tree of life opening up his grimoire like every day, like lighting the 19 candles on his weird retrofitted fucking menorah that he does. Maybe.
I could see his Christmas tree just lined with Coors Lights.
My name just is Kid. And then the fucking golem comes out lumbering and it has big tits on it instead in a bikini. That'd be pretty great.
Shannon Tweed. Awesome. Well,
another
thank you all.
Another great reference.
Hey, man. That's even old for us, yes. By the way. And she's wonderful. She's that old. That being old is bad. Anyway.
Jesus Christ.
I don't know.
What did you do?
I don't know. Thank you all so much for listening. And thank you so much for giving to our Patreon. Again, I think our offer still stands. For the trip to Six Flags,
trip
if you want
to
do that.
Flags. All yeah. it is, all you got to do.
All you got to do.
It's 66.6 payments of 15 grand up top. and that's Six Flags on us. We'll take you out. We'll buy you booze. We're going to have, you can get all of the free stuff at Six Flags you want to get. You can do the whole thing.
Anything.
We'll pay for the hotel. We'll pay for the weed. I'll bring all the weed. That'll be great.
all right, everyone. Thank you so much. Seriously. For giving. Hail yourselves.
Hail Satan.
Magustalations.
Hail me. No. Please.
And be careful with the occult stuff. Be careful.
Be careful. Do your reading.